Good afternoon, everyone. I'm James Maku from University of Florida, and this afternoon I will be presenting on the topic Dissecting Genetic and Molecular Mechanisms of Nodulation in Cultivated Peanuts. So these are my outline. I'll give you a brief background of the research and what our main objectives are, and also the results at the moment, then our conclusion. So to start with, as we all know that the scientific name for cultivated peanut is Arachis zypogea, and it's from a legume family. It's basically a polyploid, which is an allopolyploid, because it's actually gained its genome from two different relative ancestral lines. And the A genome is actually derived from Arachis durensis, the B genome from Arachis epiensis. And presently, the genome of the ancestral lines are basically in the public domain now in the peanut base. The genome size for the ancestral line is 2.7 gigabits. So as you know that peanut is actually a very common commodity or food crops in individuals in their houses, because it's rich in oil, vitamins, minerals, and they are also being processed into edible oils, and they are actually being consumed as foods. And for the most part, virtually all the parts of peanuts are actually very important, to the extent that the plant residue are also being used as fodder for cattle. So about the production of peanut in the world, China happens to be the highest producer of peanut, followed by India, Nigeria, and the US after Nigeria. And in the United States, Georgia state actually happens to be the highest producer of peanut, followed by Florida, Alabama, and so on. So basically, why are we interested in biological nitrogen fixation? Or to simply put, why are we interested in peanut nodulation? For the most part, we know that the primary element, which is the most important compound that is involved, that has been involved in nitrogen fixation, is actually nitrogen. And we know that nitrogen is very important in the in crop production, and also the limiting factors of nitrogen, when it's deficient, it could result to a negative production of crops. And as we know that in 2050, has been projected that population, human population, will increase exponentially to about 9 billion. So we also need to look for different means of increasing the production of crops. So in this case, we are actually using peanut. And also, there are several means in which nitrogen could actually be made available for plants. One of these source is actually through commercial or industrial source. However, this type of source could be detrimental to the environment of the living organisms, probably the aquatic community, when there's a leaching, and in high concentration in the in water bodies could actually lead to the death of those aquatic organisms. So now, we cannot talk about biological nitrogen fixation or nodulation in peanuts without talking about the interaction between the two major players, which is the legume roots and at the same time the rhizobia. So on this note, we actually have there are actually two different major pathways in which bacteria could actually infect legume. The first one is actually through intracellular entry with the use of infection intracellular threading cells, And the other one is actually through crack entry. The first pathway, it's actually exhibited by about 75% of nodulating peanuts, which includes medicago, tranquilata, and lotus or japonicus. Whereas the other 25% of nodulating leguminous plants actually exhibit the crack entry mode, which is labeled in B. So, not too many information are available on the other mode of entry, which is the crack entry. So, most of the studies is actually based on the 75%, which they actually use medicago, catula, alfalfa, and also a lot of japonicus as the model plant. So we're trying to actually use peanut if the genetic mechanisms and the molecular mechanism have been dissected very well. We are trying to use that as a model plant for the other type of infection mode. So talking about the genetic basis now, several work has actually been done that actually paved way for our own work, and most of them actually concluded that there is actually more than one gene which is responsible for nodulation in peanut. So based on this, the overall objective of my study basically is to unravel the genetic and molecular mechanisms of peanut nodulation, and to this end, I will only be dwelling on the genetic part of the objective. And the first objective is basically to genetically map and fine map nodulation genes in cultivated peanuts. And the second objective is to validate the regulation of selected differentially expressed genes within the QTL region using RT-PCR. So for the objective one, as you can see, here is actually the plant materials that is actually being used. And this image actually shows the pedigree of the materials that are being used for this experiment. As you can see, the original parental lines that were actually crossed in order to generate the material we used were actually, both of them are node plus, which means the produces nodule. So, but along the line, after the first cross, they actually, the F1 actually gave node plus, which means they all produce nodules. But during several selfing, they find out in F2 that some of the plants are node minus and some of the plants are actually node plus. So up to the F6 generation. So in F6 generation, there are actually two different family. Meanwhile, those family are kind of like they're like sister inbred lines or isogenic lines because they look similar. So from this, we have the E4 node minus, the E5 node plus, E7 node minus, and E6 node plus. But I will only be dwelling on one of the family, which actually encompasses the E4 node minus and the E5 node plus. So because of the constructing, phenotypic appearance, they actually are very suitable material to study nodulation. So down here, in 2014, we actually crossed E4 and E5, and the F1 actually are all node plus. And whilst when we served the F1 population, we generated a segregating population, which is our F2. And this actually has both node minus and node plus. And for fine mapping purposes, we selected some heterozygote lines just to be able to like get some recombinant events. So we did some planting in 2016 to expand population and also 2017. The image, as you can see, shows the phenotypic appearance of the materials we used. The PI-2090 is actually a node plus, and the F487A is also a node plus. As you can see, the leaves look very green, and the roots actually have nodules. And if you look underneath, the E4 minus is without nodule, and the E5 plus has nodule. And from this, the leaves, the E4 has a yellow leaves, and the E5, which is node plus, has a green leaf. But this image is not that clear. But if you look downward, This is our field in Sitra in 2014. The leaf color actually shows the segregation pattern of the population we actually use for our study. So the result for objective one. After our selfing, we actually got about 542 individual plants in our F2. And when we actually tried to use a chi-square to test for the goodness of fit, we found that our population actually fits to 9-7 ratio, which made us to actually assume that there are two gene models in play in the population we're actually working on. And as you can see here, this is the breakdown of what it means. For node plus, it means the two genes are dominant. When they are dominant, there's the plant shows node plus. And when one of the genes is actually recessive, or when both are recessive, then you have a node minus plant. So we also went further to use our population, the F population, to construct a genetic map. And to do this, basically, we use both the phenotypic data and also the genotypic data from the DNA extraction from those samples to construct this linkage map. And as you can see from this result, the figure A actually shows we use seven polymorphic SSR markers for this purpose. And you can see this dot actually represents a QTL. So we basically found the QTL in this population between these two flanking markers. And the fig B actually shows the load score, which is very high. And the statistical representation of the QTL map actually shows that the PVE percent, which is the phenotypic variance expressed, is about 31.64 for this QTL, which is very high. So for the objective one, we still have so many things to do. For the objective two, which is to validate the DEGs using RT-PCR, previously, we actually got about over 180 gene models between the flanking region in objective one. And within that 180 genes, five of them were actually differentially expressed. So using RNA-seq data. So the purpose of this objective two basically is to validate the regulation of those five differentially expressed genes to see if they are actually regulated or not. So doing that, we use RT-PCR. We have two our family, E4, E5, and two treatments, water and our rhizobia treatment. We have to replicate. We did some inoculation. We extracted the total RNA, and we synthesized the cDNA to probe those five genes. And here is actually our result. Based on the RT-PCR result, we found that the result was actually the same as that of RNA-seq data. This represents gene 1, gene 2 to gene 5. And the white one is the E4, the blue is the E5. And they were actually like regulated, up and down regulated. And this image actually shows the comparison between the RNA-seq data and the RT-PCR. So when we compare both of them, we actually find out that they actually have the same regulation results. So on this note, we actually conclude that there's a QTL in the population that we're actually working on between these two flanking markers, and the distance is about 3 centimorgan, which is very large. So we still need to try to find map to narrow down the exact location of the QTL. And also, we confirm the expression level of the five selected differentially expressed genes using this RT-PCR. So future work, basically, from what we found is since the E4 and E5 are very close, they are very similar, it's very hard to design SSR markers. So we are trying to use this method, SNP array, for our genotyping, and we'll also do the genotypic data analysis. And the second thing is basically to use any of those genes that were actually confirmed selected using transformation and also CRISPR-Cas9. So we are trying to see the function of the selected DEGs to actually see their impact in nodulation. On this note, I would like to acknowledge my committee chair and advisor and my committee member, and also the lab members, and also Florida Peanut Producers and the LA Career Awards from University of Florida that actually helped in initiating this project. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, James. So we can have one quick question to James. Maybe I can ask quickly. So you mentioned that one QTL represents 31%.
Yeah.
So in addition to that, you have some other QTLs. So what is happening?
Yes. One of my colleagues actually identified another QTL on that same chromosome. So I'm only focusing on this one chromosome based on my population. But with the result of the other ones, we basically have two different QTLs on that chromosome.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, I have another question. Do you know of any genetic variation among the children?
Can you come again, please?
So his question is, do you know something about natural variation for nitrogen fixation in the groundnut germ plant? Is that right?
Not at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks once again.